called The Invasion of America. It's a dramatic narrative based on the Japanese raid on Pearl Harbor, and while the author is to be applauded for the general accuracy of his writing, there is a glaring historical inconsistency that you will want to hear about. Author Fred Allhoff sees the Japanese invasion of America through the eyes of a make-believe naval intelligence officer, Lieutenant Douglas Norton. The scene is Honolulu, and the dialogue begins, and from now on, I'm quoting. Listen. The increasing roar sounds like the surging swell of voices from a distant stadium. Planes. Our patrol. He shook his head. Too many. In the distance, there were sharp explosions like vicious cracks of thunder. They rolled and blasted and echoed. A blinding, jagged sheet of yellow flame rose and spread. Well, it's come at last. What happened, sir? Was it bad? Very bad. They caught us flat-footed. Approached very high, 20, maybe 30,000 feet. The anti-aircraft boys held up their fire. They knew just where to strike and what to strike with. They hit us with incendiaries the first time over. They caught the hangars at Hickam and Wheeler Fields, even went out of their way to set fire to Rogers Airport buildings and the barracks. The enemy gave us three blasts. It'll be days before we can patch up. Were the casualties heavy, sir? I'm still quoting now. They scored a direct hit on Schofield Barracks. Clipper service, of course, has been suspended. The Japs are reputed fond of shooting down unarmed transport planes. And Pearl Harbor, sir? It's a mess. They scored direct hits on the foundries and on the pumping plant near the dry dock. They burned the air station hangars. The hospital is all right. Pearl Harbor was a cinch. All they had to do was follow the coastline and blast away. But how could they get several hundred planes here? My guess is they got a couple of carriers through by traveling away from regular shipping lanes. The President of the United States announced by radio to the country that America was at war with Japan, whose fleets, even then, were headed eastward. Our country has known some black days. Again, I'm still quoting now. Our country has known some black days, but none so black as this one. Now, once again, these were excerpts from Fred Allhoff's novel called The Invasion of America. And to ensure the technical accuracy of his writing, the author had consulted with Lieutenant General Robert Lee Bullard, Rear Admiral Yates Sterling, and others in the military. Now, please hear this carefully. Fred Allhoff's Invasion of America, his book called The Invasion of America, was published on September 7, 1940, precisely 15 months prior to the Japanese bombing raid on Pearl Harbor. Could he have known the rest of the story?
This hour of Sound Off on KPRL brought to you by Slow Heating and Air, your local reliable heating and air expert. Call 805-423-5119.
238-5775. 238-KPRL. Sound Off continues on KPRL, the North County's number one choice for news, talk, and sports. This is Sound Off on the right choice, KPRL.
Okay, we're back. We've got Jennifer Greninger from Templeton Unified School District, or is it Joint Unified?
No, it's not Joint.
It's just Unified?
Templeton Unified.
Okay. And then we got Randy Kwiatkowski from San Miguel.
Hello.
And so I appreciate you guys coming out. Randy, we've never really gotten you to come in to talk about education in San Miguel. People are tired of Jennifer and me, particularly me. But let's start with you. Tell us about San Miguel.
Well, San Miguel is obviously a very high Hispanic population, a lot of English language learners, a lot of economically challenged. So 70-80% of the school district, and we have two schools. They're very different. The one up on the lake, Cappy Culver's, very different from down in the town, San Miguel, Lillian Larson. But, so we qualify for a lot of grants and aid that other schools in the county do not. You know, we had a we opened up a TK transitional school, well, TK school, state TK,
right?
And a lot of other districts did, and then the one-time funding went away. So, you know, we were able to hang on to it with, you know, the grants and such that we qualify for. So it's doing real well. Got a community day school also. Super lady that runs that. America is her name.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
It's a great name.
It's a great name. Yeah, so... you know, not much happening up there. We're finishing up on, you know, spending some bonds money from, what was it, 2020?
Yeah, I was going to ask you about the, we'll get to that later, but yeah, wanted to talk bonds and finances later. What's the total, what's the student population, roughly?
Roughly 700.
Really?
That's between all. The two
I
schools.
I thought it was a little more than that.
Yeah, I think those are about right.
Yeah, and so you've got Cappy Culver, is that K through 8 or TK through 8, or is that?
That's TK through 8. I'm pretty sure it's TK. It started out as a K-5 when it was built, and then it went to K-6, then it went to K-7, K-8. Boy, you talk about, you know, serving the public. Those meetings were rough, you know. Everybody shows up. We want this to be K-6, and... We had the entire middle school teachers up there saying, you know, you don't, because you won't have, it'll be like a one-room schoolhouse. You know, you won't have special credentialed teachers for math and English and English language arts. But they were like, no, we want it. And then they were back the next year, K-7. And then so, yes, K-8. Hopefully in the future when we get some bond money going up there, we could... actually have a middle school.
Right. But, and then Lillian Larson is TK through 8.
Right, right.
Because yeah. My kids used to play against Lillian Larson kids.
Yeah, we got some sports coming back since, you know, the volleyballs did good, softball, everything. Got a good track program. It kind of ebbs and flows. It's such a small school, you know, the... athletic instructor or director will retire. There goes the sports program. Get a new person, it comes back again. You know, I'd like to see that sort of level out, you know, this ebb and flowing. It's just not good for a school long term. A lot of things are like that in a small school district.
How long have you been on the school board there?
Well, probably 15 years.
Lordy.
Yeah, yeah.
You were a glutton.
Well, I came in right after we had a real big fiasco up there. You know, public knowledge, we had a superintendent who was, you know, grooming a underage child, and then it came to light when the child turned 18, and that was a big deal. That it's just, you know, you don't want to forget history like that.
Right.
It's not good. Schools are a place where, you know, children should be safe, protected. And, you know, these people that are in authority, you trust. And that was a big, big deal. That's kind of what got me on. I was school site council before that. But that was when I think I was appointed. So
I experienced that.
Yeah, right.
All right. Miss Jennifer, how are you?
I'm doing well. I was just going to comment for Randy, if they do a junior high, my recommendation is keep it a 7-8, not a 6-7-8.
Right.
Because I really, it's just my personal opinion. I think that sixth graders are still really young, and putting them with those there's such a huge developmental leap from sixth grade to seventh and eighth.
Yeah, I agree with you. When I grew up, I was up in Northern California. We had all the middle schools were 7-8, and high schools were 9-12.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So I graduated junior high in eighth grade, started high school Then I moved down to the valley in Fresno, went back to junior high because they had 7, 8, 9, and then high schools were 10, 11, 12. So I got to graduate junior high twice.
Wow.
I did too, but it wasn't for that reason. Jennifer, how many schools they've got in Templeton? You got the high school,
we have
middle school, and then
we have Vineyard two elementary schools.
Oh, two elementary.
But okay. they're different grades. So Templeton Elementary School is TK through second, and Vineyard Elementary is third through five. And then aside from the junior high and the high school, so that's four. Then we have an adult school. We have Eagle Canyon, and we have a homeschool.
Okay. And you're finishing up your first term as trustee.
Correct.
You've already filed, and you were on the official SloCounty.gov candidate list. Anybody running against you?
Not yet. We'll see what happens.
Yeah. Are you the only one that's up?
No. Janelle Armette is also up.
I didn't see her on here. Just you. You're the only one that's filed their paperwork. And Maria Elena Garcia is out in Shandon. I'll have to get in touch with her. We never talked to Shannon. We never talked to Templeton. San Miguel.
Well, yeah, we've got three people coming up. I'm one of them. So it's a five-person board. So we have three coming up.
And you,
are you five also?
We're also five, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, we're seven. But, Randy, you've told me that are you all having issues finding candidates or no?
We are, and it's been kind of a musical chairs for the past 5-6 years. It seems like the whole time I've been on the board, it's been like that, but there have been periods where it's been kind of stable. It's difficult to find people that want to run or serve, and the California Voting Act made it more difficult, so they want to split everybody up into groups.
Right.
And, I just don't serve the people in my trustee area. I serve the whole school. I don't think that's right to split people up like that. But that's what the state wants to do. So you end up...
So I'm sorry to interrupt. So you all have gone to the trustee areas.
Mm-hmm.
How big are your areas?
They're pretty big, because we go almost up into Monterey County there, up on the lake, up there toward, the B-Rock, and around Heritage Ranch, and then way out Indian Valley, to the east. It's a big area, very, very rural.
Right.
Yeah.
So I was thinking more in terms of population, but I think for the Paso Robles Joint Unified School Districts, I've got one of the largest, I think I do have the largest trustee area. And it goes up into, I think all the way to Bradley. But it goes up through Ranchita Canyon, skirts to the east, or the west, rather, of Parkfield, up through the same areas that probably you're describing.
Mm-hmm.
Jennifer, you guys are not, you didn't do the trustee areas. You're still all at large.
We are. We're tiny. Total student population, we have right around a little over 2,000 students in the district.
And Randy, what did you say, 700?
Yeah, 700.
And our land mass is not as big as San Miguel. It would just be, I'm already hearing Randy talk about how difficult it is to get people to step up, and it's because of that. So we would be in that same situation, if not worse.
Yeah, I think Paso is going to run into that problem as well. I mean, when they established that the trustee areas, they started phasing them in during the 2022 election. And that was honestly how Joel Peterson got on the board the second time. There was no campaigning. There was no election. Nobody else had signed up. And so a lot of people get angry at him for doing it, but he could walk right in and do it because there was nobody there. And I'm concerned that the same thing may be about to happen next Friday because nobody's announced in trustee area 4 yet. So we'll see. But the at-large, I think after November, I'm going to start pushing to try to undo the trustee areas. Because I just, it doesn't make sense to me. If you look at, I think it's trustee area 3, or maybe it's 6. It's Leo Castillo's area. It's a very small area. Maybe a square mile. I think my ranch is bigger than that area.
Oh my gosh, that's really small.
Yeah.
And that's the whole thing about the CRVA. It was done by race, by color.
Yeah.
They divide you up like that. And then federally, the Supreme Court just decided
right.
That's not right.
Yeah, Louisiana versus Calais basically said that that's all unconstitutional.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it was not only the school districts in California, and the California Voter Rights Act is
all
we're talking about. That's in now, in my opinion, in conflict with the U.S. Voter Rights Act. Big surprise that California and the federal government are in conflict. But I don't know if you read, or if you're a nerd like me and you ever read any of the opinions of the Supreme Court justices, but Clarence Thomas grew up in Effingham County, Georgia, which is just north of Savannah, one of the poorest counties in the United States. He was raised by his grandparents because his parents, I think it was a broken family.
Mm.
But he was raised by his grandparents. He had, I think, one of the most profound statements in the argument, the deciding opinion. And that was basically I'll paraphrase, but what he was saying is what the Democrat Party basically has done by breaking people up by race is saying you can run as a black person or a brown person in this area only. And so
segregation all over again.
We're going to let you run in this area, but you know, you can't run anywhere else. And when you look around the South, I'm blanking on all their names now, but you've got a black senator from South Carolina. You've got, probably you're going to wind up with a black governor in Georgia. You've got, a black, congressman in, Texas who is probably going to move up to a statewide office. And they're all conservative.
Mm-hmm. Clarence Thomas he's got a great mind. And I remember when he was, you know, going to be confirmed, you know, Joe Biden was leading the Senate, grilling him.
Yeah.
And his most famous line was, you know, this is nothing more than a political lynching.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what they were trying to do to him. He was an anomaly. He was black, but he was conservative. And the Democrats don't like that.
Get it.
And that's a good point, because if you're a minority color, then if it's an at-large district, you can run in any of the elections. You don't have to wait for your trustee area to come around.
Right.
So it limits everybody, including them.
Yeah. But particularly them. And that was kind of the point Clarence Thomas was making is, and the reason I brought up the black congressmen and senators in the South is these are black men that have succeeded in statewide office based off of ideas. You know, they've been accepted by, you know, the supposed racist white community down there, and they competed in the arena of ideas and they won. And so Clarence Thomas's point was, if you're just going to say all you can do is run for office in this little town where it's predominantly people like you, you're limiting, you've shrunk that arena down. You know, right now, you know, there are probably, you know, there are probably people in all these little trustee areas that would like to run, but they can't because the seat's not up. You know, I'm sure somebody wants to run against me, but they can't.
What a concept, huh? The content of your character versus the color of your skin.
Oh, yeah.
Who said that? I'm old enough to remember.
we'll see how that turns out. Jennifer, you've got one other seat that's up?
That's right, yeah.
And
that's Janelle Armette's seat, and I haven't heard one way or the other if she's filing, so I don't know.
Yeah, I don't. So, Randy, have you guys ever been in a position where you didn't have people fill the seats?
Oh, yes, all the
time. So what happens? Does the county step in?
Well, there was one time when the county was going to step in. We were down to a three-person board. We had two people waiting that wanted to be appointed. And one of the three board members was really antagonistic. John Green, he just passed away too, you know, but he would just do anything to not vote with the other two because you had to have a quorum. Five-person board, three people had to be there to have a meeting, three people all had to vote the same. So back then, Julian Crocker was county superintendent, and we had, you know, Kurt DeVos was the superintendent. And Kurt says, you know, why don't you resign, Randy? Then the county will have to come in. And Julian said, that's a great idea. So I said, okay, I'm going to resign from the board here. And then there would only be two left. We could never have any more meetings. It would be, you know, it'd be gone. So county would step in and they would make the appointments. Well, as soon as we did that, old John Green came to the meeting and said, okay, I'll vote for him. Let's get him in. And we filled up the board. But it was more of a threat back then.
Right.
But it was the only time I've ever come that close to, you know, no board. Plenty of board meetings since then where only two people show up and we go home because there's no board meeting. But, you know, I'd say for the past 5 years, we've had one vacancy four of those years.
Mm.
And it's difficult because if you have someone sick or they don't show up, it really puts a burden on the people, you know, making the hard decisions and voting.
Right. Mm. Well, yeah, I'd like to hear more about that. We're going to take a break real quick. We'll be right back.
This Fox Business News update on KPRL is brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
I'm Stuart Varney, and this is the Fox Business Report.
The major averages ending the last trading day of the month sharply higher as investors digest the latest batch of big earnings reports. Friday's moves come at the end of a turbulent week in which AI concerns, the Iranian conflict, and the Fed rattled markets. Shares of Amazon jumping over 15% following its blockbuster earnings report on cloud strength, Amazon notching its fastest revenue growth in 4 years. While Apple stock plunging over 7%, the tech giant delivered an earnings and revenue beat, but its services and China revenue came up short. The Dow winners, Amazon, Alphabet, and Microsoft. The Dow decliners, Apple, United Health Group, and Goldman Sachs. The Dow up 277 points. The tech-heavy NASDAQ higher by 252. S&P 500 up 52. That's your Fox Business Report. I'm Hillary Barsky, invested in you.
Wesley Financial Group is not a law firm, and Chuck McDowell, definitely not an attorney. This is Chuck. If someone talked you into buying something really silly, and you want to get out of that silly little thing, my advice, get the facts. Call me, and I'll send you our timeshare exit kit absolutely free. Inside, you'll learn how timeshare works and all your options for cancellation.
Call Wesley now for your free timeshare exit information kit. 800-978-1515. That's 800-978-1515.
This Fox Business News update on KPRL brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
Summer's most amazing event, the Paso Robles Rotary Winemakers 27th Annual Cook-Off, Saturday, August 8th at the Paso Robles Event Center. Don't miss wine, beer, and amazing food, live music, and more. Sponsored by the Rotary Club of Paso Robles, 100% of the profits go to an endowment which awards scholarships to local graduating high school seniors. For tickets and additional information, go to winemakerscookoff.com.
The Sound Off lines are open at 238-5775. 238-KPRL. The North County's listening to you on Sound Off.
All right, we're back. You can call back and change the topic or ask us any questions you want, either school board related or not. I know one question that I'm getting texts on is for Jennifer. And this is the, we need the ground truth on what in the world is going on with litter boxes.
Oh, there's definitely no
furries.
Litter boxes. There's
okay,
there's nothing.
So that's good.
Yes,
that's
there's
good.
Never been. I've never said that. It was, I think, just a
vicious rumor.
Well, I think that when people are speaking from recollection, we have kids who identify as furries. And so
does small town San Miguel have this problem too?
Well, we have sandboxes, but I don't know about furries.
You might want to check those. When I was a kid, my parents wouldn't let me play in the sandboxes because of the cats, actually.
Correct. Yeah. Yes. No. But we've never had any litter boxes, to my knowledge. It's never been an issue. I didn't even know there was a rumor about it. I started seeing online when this came up that people were saying, well, they have litter boxes only for when there's an active shooter because the kids can't leave the room. And I'm like, no, not even
that
in
one.
That situation. I've never heard that before. You can't have litter boxes in the room in case there might be an active
shooter.
Somebody
said that on this last, when it was brought up on Tuesday.
It's on Facebook.
I'm blaming Eric and Randall for
this
whole. Yeah,
no, it's people's comments
on Facebook.
This whole
kerfluffle.
Yeah.
The cat box kerfluffle.
There's no cat boxes, just in case, nothing.
Well, we do have, when I first got appointed, before I got fired the first time, well, I haven't been fired the second time yet. But when I first got appointed, there were, furries. And I did see them. There were furry sightings. And it is these kids walking around in, I saw at least two kids walking around in animal costumes. It's not Halloween.
Ears and tails.
Well, it was a full, it wasn't ears and tails. It was a full, mascot costume and pajamas,
right?
And it caused me to get really focused on, could we have a dress code? I think a dress code would probably solve a lot of this problem. And I started researching the dress code, and Paso Robles has the most lax, the high school in particular has the most lax dress code in the entire county.
Oh, no. Templeton has you beat now.
No. Oh, okay. Did you downgrade yours
in
the last few years?
Oh, yes.
I'll have to go back and check.
I appreciate
you guys doing that to take the heat off of us.
Yeah. So I brought it up as an issue because I was seeing kids, particularly at the junior high, wearing such short shorts and midriff shirts, which was already against our dress code, and nobody was enforcing it. And so the board, I was hoping that we would create a situation where this is at least enforced, and the board went the opposite direction. I couldn't get a majority to do that. And they said, it's now just up to the site principals. It's very generic and vague. There's very little specific mention of, I think they took out the midriff, can't. That's not present in our dress code policy now.
Well, then we didn't have it before. You all did.
We took it out.
You took it out. And because I went and looked, I compared Paso High to all the other high schools in the county. And by far, we were the only ones that at the time, that would have been 2023, didn't have restrictions on, covering your shoulders and your midriff. If you go to the Clovis Unified School District, they actually have nice flyers showing you, if you have your arms straight down at your side, your shorts can't be above your fingertips. They have to be below your fingertips. And so they've taken the step necessary to make sure you don't have I'm not going to say what I was going to say, but basically what Marines and sailors used to see a lot walking around in exotic parts of the world. Mm-hmm. It's really pretty shocking, and the attitude of my fellow board members really kind of disgusted me, because it was like, well, you know, let the parents decide. Well, no, you have community standards, and this is where public education, in my opinion, should be setting a standard and enforcing it, vice lowering it to the lowest common denominator, which is routinely what happens.
Right. Well, we all know there's plenty of studies that show that when you dress professionally, and I'm not saying kids need to dress professionally, but when you dress well, your performance is better.
Right.
You take, because you're taking pride in yourself. You're taking, you know, some, it raises your self-esteem. And so, you know, the things that I see our kids in Templeton wearing, I think is horrible. Yeah.
The, what's the science magnet school down in, Lucia Marr School District? It's a New Tech or?
Yeah.
Is that the name of it? New Tech? They have a dress code, which is actually very, very professionally oriented. You know, kids wear coat and tie there. They have to wear collared shirts. I mean, I was quite impressed with reading through their stuff.
Nice.
And
I bet they have less behavior issues.
Yeah. Academically, they, you know, I think they're still the top performing high school in the in the county.
Yeah.
So
I personally see girls at the junior high wearing shorts so short, you know, that the when you sit, of course, the bottom of the shorts rise up. And then when you stand up, they don't just relax. So they stay that way. And you can see quite a bit. It's pretty alarming.
They didn't have that when I was in junior high or high school.
Yeah, I'm glad I'm not in junior high school these days. But
well, you know, going back to those furries, maybe they should have like a dress code with you have to wear diapers.
Yeah, I, you know, that whole furry thing, we'll go back to the litter box. Here's the only thing that I never believed the whole litter box thing. And here's the reason why, because I did not think, you know, knowing the custodial union guys, they're going to say not only no, but bleep no, I'm not cleaning that up. Yep. And so that's why I didn't believe it. But then I talked to a retired custodian.
And this is in Paso, I want to clarify, not Templeton.
Well, I wasn't gonna specify, but yes, it was in Paso. I talked to a retired custodian, and he told me a story that there was actually discussion that it got to the point where the custodial staff was being pressured at one school in order to put litter boxes out. And I said, well, what was the answer? And it was bleep no, we're not doing it. And but that's the closest I've ever heard to there actually having been litter boxes in the bathrooms. But I have seen, you know, probably 4 or 5 kids that walk around in either the costumes or with the ears and the tails. I've heard parents have called me with some pretty shocking stories about animal-like behaviors in the classroom. In my opinion, it all just gets down to establishing a standard and enforcing it, whether it's a dress code or a behavioral standard. And that is part of, I think, you know, I don't know if you listened to me rant about Democrat Socialists of America and how you have always had a desire of communists and socialists to take over the education. Part of the process is destroying the pillars of society and destroying the norms,
social network, yeah,
and destroying the, whether it's the family, whether it's, you know, can I call you yes ma'am or yes sir without offending you? Are you a sir? Are you a ma'am? Are you a cat? I don't, you know, once you start planting the seed of doubt in all these kids' minds, they're more easily manipulated. And I see that more and more as I watch what's going on. And I see probably the teachers' unions as probably the main culprits and the main instigators of a lot of this stuff. You know, I know one of the topics I plan on bringing back at Paso is a one flag policy. And I've backed off because I wanted to time it perfectly for the upcoming election so Jim Cogan can defend his position of not wanting to have a one flag policy. And the reason I've been told that nobody wants to say, you know, there's one flag for everybody in this school and it's the American flag. But I've been told the reason we're not doing that is because the teachers union threatened to sue the school district. My response is bring it on.
You know, we had that discussion in Templeton early on when I first got elected, and the board's position was, we have too many teachers that like to have their sports team pennants in their classroom for their favorite sports teams, and I don't want to do that to them. So they declined even voting on it.
Yeah, I wasn't able to get it. Maybe I was, because I think Dorian was on the board, but I couldn't get it to pass. So,
Well, that you know, the elephant in the room is that LGBT community. They're very powerful. Politically, they're very powerful in Sacramento, in the teachers union, and it's a fight if you want to tug on that one.
Yeah, in my opinion, when I brought this up and I wrote a opinion piece in Cal Coast News, I think it was summer of 2024 about this, and it was really. My concern at the time was really after 7 October, the 7 October attack against the Israelis. And my thought is, I don't want to see Hamas flags. Having, you know, being a combat veteran, having fought against the likes of Hamas, Hezbollah, ISIS, I don't want to see their flags flying in classrooms. And you have teachers, you had representatives from PRPE that basically tried to justify what the what Hamas did, and tried to draw moral equivalencies between the Israelis and the Palestinians. You cannot, in my opinion, have a terroristic flag in your classroom. You know, continue that on, I'm honestly, this is going to upset people. And so, Kevin, if you get phone calls, I'm sorry, but I don't want to see Mexican flags. And, you know,
America.
Yeah. I want us to teach the immigrant children that we've been we're in charge of their education. I want them to feel like they're Americans. I don't want them to think I'm a Mexican who's just getting an education here, but I'm not really an American. And I've had conversations with young Latino men about this, who were born and raised here, that don't feel like they're Americans because the public education system never instilled in them a sense of patriotism or a love of country. And so I'm going to bring it back. You know me, I like stirring the pot. So.
Well, our country's got a great history of immigrants, you know, what they call it, the melting pot, right? And I'm Polish. I didn't immigrate from Poland, but probably my great-grandfather did. And, you know, back then you didn't know what you were. You know, you just thought, oh, I'm Polish, or I'm Italian, or... And then all of a sudden, this new dialectic, like, oh, you're white. Well, when did that happen, right?
If you read, it's interesting. I have a very close family friend who's diehard Irish, still lives up in Boston. And she hates, born and raised in Massachusetts. She was a senior executive with CBS News. Little left of me. But it's funny, you know, I was born in the South and I hate Yankees. You know, that was always the term. You know, I hate Yankees. She was born in New England and she hates Yankees. And the reason is the way Yankees, in air quotes, treated the Irish immigrants. And it was very common back in the 1850s, 60s, and 70s to see, you know, Irish need not apply, or, you know, no dogs, no cats, no Irish.
They were heavily persecuted.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
It's interesting to me, you know, that you're right. It's no longer, we've lost the divisions between the European ethnicities in this country. And, you know, even on my father's side of the family, they were German immigrants. You know, they were, you know, biases, I guess you would call them bigotedness.
I think after a couple of generations, you lose your ethnicity. I think I've heard the term triple melting pot. And after three generations, you know, you're not really Irish anymore. You're not Mexican. You're whatever. You're American, and primarily your ethnicity revolves around your religion. Either you're Protestant, you're Catholic, or you're Jew. So those are the three main ones. But that's a wonderful thing. We've got camaraderie here as Americans. You know, got a country to be proud of.
Yeah, we do.
All right. On that positive note, we'll take another quick break. Come back for our last segment. Ryan, what do painters do when it gets cold outside?
I don't know. What?
Well, they put on another coat, of course.
Seth, that joke needs some touch-up.
Hi, I'm Seth Peek.
And I'm Ryan Peek.
And we're the Peek Brothers.
We paint interiors year-round.
But fall and winter? That's when it's perfect time.
Yeah, perfect time for a fresh look.
We do full interior painting, residential and commercial. We work with your schedule.
Plus cabinet painting that makes old kitchens look brand new.
Clean lines, no mess, no stress.
From one room in your home to a whole office building, tasting room, medical suites, we've got you covered.
This season, call the Peek Brothers. I'm Seth Peek.
And I'm Ryan Peek.
And we're the Peek Brothers.
And everybody loves a great experience.
That's Peek Painting. PEEKPainting.com.
As the markets have their ups and downs, real estate remains one of the most stable assets in everyone's portfolio. Hi, this is Cindy Mims, owner broker of Colony Mortgage, voted best mortgage company in North County 3 years running. We offer conventional FHA, VA, and reverse mortgages and 100% purchase loans for first-time home buyers. Are you a builder and tired of the red tape when dealing with banks and expensive hard money loans? I have a great new option. Or are you 62 years or older? You can possibly eliminate your monthly mortgage payment and get cash in your pocket. At Colony Mortgage, we have hometown service with competitive rates. We have years of experience with creative financing to find that right loan for you. If it's credit issues stopping you, let us help. We move from our 20-year Atascadero location and now offer two convenient locations to meet personally in Atascadero and Paso Robles. Call 805-466-3598. Thank you for supporting your local businesses.
Do you use propane for your home or business? Family-owned and operated, Delta Liquid Energy has provided local area residents with dependable and courteous propane service since 1936. From home heating and cooking to powering your irrigation engine pump or forklift, propane can do it all. Don't forget their location, Paso Robles refills propane bottles of all sizes Monday through Friday and has a dump station for your RV. Learn more. Call Delta Liquid Energy 805-239-0616 or go online. DeltaLiquidEnergy.com.
Junior, you know why my TV is turned down so low? Last week, I went down to see Peter Lucier at Hearing Aid Specialists of the Central Coast. He's a nice young feller who tested my hearing. He had me try on these nearly invisible hearing aids. See? They ain't got no buttons or nothing. By gum, I hear like I'm 29 years old. Call Peter at Hearing Aid Specialists. Dial 805-460-7385. Or use your smartphone and go to SlowCountyHearingAids.com.
Okay, we're back. Got sidetracked talking about all the excitement in the school districts. I kind of wanted to go around the horn and sort of get everybody's thoughts on what the big issues are that you're facing in your district or facing collectively. So Jennifer, let's start with you.
Yeah. So, you know, there's not currently, I would say, big issues specific to our district. We have the bond measure that passed last time. Measure D, and we voted already to swap our two of our school sites. So where the current junior high is going to move out to where Vineyard Elementary School is, and Vineyard Elementary School is going to take where the middle school was, and therefore Templeton Elementary School and Vineyard Elementary School will be together. So you'll have a continuity amongst grade levels. And there was other reasons that we did that as well.
So just to be clear, you're consolidating the two elementary schools or no?
in my mind, that's what's happening, but they're not really seeing it as one. They're not going to change the name, I don't think, and make it one. We haven't discussed that. It's still going to be the two different school sites.
Mm-hmm.
There will be some consolidation in terms of, you know, I don't think we need to have two administrative offices.
Right.
To, you know,
that was a question I was going to ask.
Right. But, you know, I don't know how that's going to look actually. It's a number of years out. But for me, the reason being that I thought it was important to do that is, number one, I think it's much more developmentally appropriate to have TK through five together instead of TK through two with sixth, seventh, and eighth graders. And secondly, there was enough repair and upgrades that needed to happen at both school sites that the cost difference was so minimal, it didn't seem like it was a big obstacle to me to keep it separate in order to save money. And with the junior high being out at the current Vineyard Elementary School site, we can turn that into a true junior high with STEM classes that are geared towards preparing them better for high school. And that to me was the bigger reason. So I think it was a good decision. And the community's pretty split. We had just as many people who thought it was a great idea and other people who think it was a bad idea.
Right.
The reasons for the bad ideas was, well, gosh, you know, our kids that are currently at the junior high site enjoy after school getting to walk down the street to the Templeton Market, and it gives them some independence. They can hang out there. And now if they're going to be out at the Vineyard Elementary School site, they can't do that. So we're taking away their independence. Well, we currently bus kids from Vineyard Elementary School over to the junior high school at the end of the school day. And I don't see why that can't continue. It would. So I don't really see the big issue there. They're going to still be able to get over to the Templeton Market. I think the other reason was they were worried about kids, you know, junior high kids coming out to walk home from school, and they would run right out into the street. And Vineyard is a really busy street. So I also don't see that. I mean, I think kids who are sixth, seventh, and eighth graders are old enough to know at that point not to do that. I don't think they're that, we have kids that are that stupid. I've never seen junior hires run right out into the street. So I don't think that's a concern for me. The other issue was...
unless they're on their phone.
Oh, well, yeah, that could be. But hopefully they're smart enough to figure this out, right? I think they are. And if they're not, we're not doing a very good job educating them.
Oh, there's so many things I want to say, but I won't.
Yeah. The other issue was at our current... what's currently the junior high, there's a large cement staircase that goes from one, you know, the upper side of the campus down to the lower campus. And people were really concerned that third, fourth, and fifth graders would have a lot of trouble with those stairs. It would be a safety issue. I don't know any kids in that age group that have issues with stairs. I see most of them bounding up and down stairs with no problem. So I had jokingly said, maybe we should make it one big slide. It'll attract kids to the district.
And somebody liked that idea and they all took me very seriously.
They took me very seriously, thought it was a horrible idea. It would be even more of a safety issue. I'm just like, oh my gosh, you just totally missed the humor there. And so I think we addressed all those issues. Another one was the parking, the traffic issue. Well, the population at the junior high and the elementary school is roughly the same. So I don't see there being a difference in traffic. Actually, I think there will be less traffic because more parents have children closer in age than a big gap. So if you are having to take kids to school at Templeton Elementary School, and then you also had kids at Vineyard, you were having to race across town to get them to Vineyard on time or vice versa. And so I see that helping because you're going to have, you know, TK through fifth grade. It's a larger age range to be at one site to drop off.
Randy, what about you guys? Any problems with stairs?
No, not that I know of. I think we're going to maybe postpone our bond thing until 2028. We've got another meeting to iron that out.
Probably, especially after you, your constituents see how much they're going to have to pay for the Paso bond.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my gosh. So I'll
add, too, that with this swap, there are not going to be any classrooms in that lower portion anyway, so nobody will be using those stairs.
All right. Well, the stairs was a concern.
No.
Although I liked the slide idea. I thought that would be...
Well, you know, we've got some really good things going on out there. I mean, a shout out to our special ed leader, Leonard. He's just doing great out there. And we've opened up a hearing school, too. So great for kids with disabilities. What was it, the 805 games? Those are the guys with serious disabilities. We participated mm-hmm. in that. Another shout out to our food services lady, Lauren. She is awesome. She is awesome. Don't ever leave us, Lauren. So we're doing good out there, and sports is picking up. And hopefully we'll get some of those kids back from Almond Acres that are, you know, leaving San Miguel every year. But that's another story. They're a good school, Almond Acres. And so, maybe I'll have you out, Kenny. You need some help down here in Paso? Shoot, maybe I should run for one of those open spots when I pull my papers out.
You are one of the feeder schools.
Hey, I got a campaign slogan. How about this? Stop scrolling, start reading.
That's I want to see, I've read more and more articles about, you know, the demise of critical thought, and a lot of the European countries that, you know, went down the road of technology in the classroom are now backing away from it, and they're showing that it's having positive results and test scores and things like that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I had always felt, I do everything on paper. I can't do things on computers. It just doesn't, I don't retain the knowledge as well. Mm-hmm. I have to print things out, I have to write things. And I actually started reading articles in the Epoch Times about how they've proven that you retain more knowledge when you do write it down, mm-hmm. Or when you do read off of paper than you do off of computers.
Yeah, the electronic media is just really, it's wreaking havoc with the young kids. I know our teachers are already backing away from all the Chromebooks and the technology. And it's, of course, our phone, you know, we have a good phone policy. The kids, we don't have phones in the classroom at all, so...
Have you guys had pushback on that from parents at all, or have they been supportive?
They've been pretty supportive. We did revise our cell phone policy a year or two ago, and we've had a full year now with that policy in place, and that is K through 8, their phone has to be off and away for the entire day. The high school has to be off and away for instruction time only, and that's the only site that we're seeing any problems. So kids can pull their phone back out and turn it on during passing period and any other breaks. Well, that passing period is such a short period of time. They're coming into the classroom, their phone's still on, they're not following the teacher's instruction because the bell hasn't rung yet.
Right.
And so it's creating issues. Nobody on the board wanted to change that. My point was, as these kids come up through the grades, they're going to already be used to this. Why don't we go ahead and make it off and away for the whole day? And the answer was, well, high schoolers have jobs and they need to be able to be contacted by their employer. And I'll tell you more information about that after the break.
Nope, that's it. There is no break.
Oh, there's no break?
Nope. Sorry, you're going to have to hold. You're going to leave everybody. It's a cliffhanger. All right. Well, I appreciate you guys coming out.
Thank you, Kenny.
On a positive note. Anyways, everybody have a great week.
This hour of Sound Off on KPRL was brought to you by Lynn Patrol, specializing in dryer vent cleaning. Don't overwork your dryer or let your vent start a fire. Contact Dylan at lynnpatrolca.com or call 805-975-5176.
AM 1230 KPRL, 99.3 FM, KPRL.com, Paso Robles, Atascadero, Templeton.
It's 2 o'clock.